Occasionally, the gospel hands to the hapless preacher something that absolutely demands to be dealt with. We might want to talk about something else that day, but somehow something in the gospel reading demands to be heard, standing majestic like an elephant in the room, squashing everything but itself until we listen. And I guess it's obvious by now that today is such a day and that this statement from our gospel reading demands attention. Verse 26, whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple. You know, I'm sure that the people who hung out with Jesus just wished at times that he wouldn't say things like this. It must have made their lives at least confusing and maybe difficult. After all, one of the main things we try to do in churches, first of all, to have people love one another, have us love one another, but it's also to care for families and to bring people of different generations together. That's something I've always been passionate about in ministry, and it just gets more difficult if the founder seems to be saying that unless we hate each other, we won't enter the kingdom. The trouble is, although he may be exaggerating just a little to get our attention, underneath, he means what he is trying to say, and even after thousands of years, it is still a powerful and liberating message. So great as the temptation is, I'm going to try not to explain it away. Because I do think that Jesus was saying something important about families, and to families, actually. To hear this message for families, we need to look at the story which comes just after the passage we heard today. It's the story of the prodigal son. And although we haven't read it today, I would venture to guess that most of us know it. Once you've heard the prodigal son, it's hard to forget it. So deep are its insights into how we live in families. It's about a young man who seems to be doing what Jesus suggests. He seems to hate his father and his brother. In fact, he behaves as though his father is already dead. He demands that the father give him his inheritance now. And when he does, the young man heads off to the big city to live the high life. It's only when he has squandered it all on loose living that he wakes up to the truth about himself. Only when his birthright is gone. Only when he wakes up in a pigsty, eating the pig's food even, and finds that, which is quite far from keeping kosher, I think. That's when he finds that slavery is the only option he has left. And that's when he realizes that his possessions have actually possessed him. He has, in fact, acted like a man possessed. And he now knows it because in his madness and greed, he has reached a place where he simply has nothing left except his life. On that desperate day, he finally sees what a gift his life is. He suddenly sees that this is his true birthright. He has done absolutely nothing to earn or deserve it, and in fact could not earn or deserve his life even if he wanted to. He is finally grateful for everything, in fact, especially grateful for all that he once had. He understands now what his father has done for him. He discovers in himself a very healthy kind of shame. It's the sort of comeuppance that at times we fathers can only dream of. So in his shame and sorrow, he goes to his father to beg for mercy. How sweet is that? And to be allowed to work and live as one of the hired men. And this is where Jesus holds out hope for a completely different kind of family. And especially the hope of a completely different kind of fatherhood than was common in his world, perhaps. Really, it is just two little words which describe how different this father and this family was. The gospel says of this father that when the son was still far off, he saw him coming. The father saw him coming and, quote, he ran. Just two little words, he ran. In that ancient Middle Eastern world, did fathers run? A mother might run, but fathers? Not so much, I think. A father might go and surround himself with servants and seat himself in splendor in the biggest, best, most important seat in the house and wait until the son came crawling to him with his face in the dust. But this father is a new father, a different father. He's a father who acts a bit like a mother, maybe. The gospel tells us that he ran and put his arms around his son and kissed him. To me, this is good news, both for the father and for the son. Already, the terrible chapter of the son's stupidity and greed begins to be behind them. The father might have said something completely different. He might have said, "That's not how we behave in this family." Or, "You had no right to treat me like that. I'm your father." Or, "How dare you show your face?" But once again, this father's spectacular forgiveness sets them both free. He does not compound the sad tale with recriminations or guilt. They have already suffered enough. He simply moves straight into the love, which can be their only saving grace. And this is forgiveness and love of a very costly kind, quite literally in the parable. From where we sit, it almost doesn't seem quite right. Like the elder son, working away in the fields all these years, we can't help but feel that the father was a bit foolish, a bit prodigal, perhaps. He should have maybe held something back, we think. He should not have forgiven his son so easily, we think. In our judgment, we can't help feeling that he ought not to have given the inheritance to this unworthy ne'er-do-well in the first place. He should at least have demanded some recompense, if only in token of the son's repentance before he forgave. Most of us know how these kinds of things can go in families. We try our best to stick together, to support one another, to be the people on whom our loved ones can most rely in difficult times. But breakdowns do occur. This prodigal episode could easily become, in any family, the occasion for conflict or estrangement. It could easily have become the moment talked about or not talked about for decades afterwards, when the father disowned his undeserving son for his unforgivable endangerment of the family finances. Or it could be the moment of a breakup between the two brothers, or between the older son and the father, or the beginning of a family culture of blame and victimhood. The rhetoric of that breakdown would inevitably be that the guilty party deserved what he got. That is often the way of it, it seems. But it is specifically into the context of these dysfunctional possibilities that the Son of Man speaks, verse 26. "Whoever comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even life itself, cannot be my disciple." It's a difficult message, but it's a liberating message. It has a liberating purpose about forgiveness, about how forgiveness opens the door to the kingdom. Even in families, even with our children, whose love so easily claims our whole hearts, our first love must still be for God. That's really what Jesus is saying. Only in the kingdom of that divine love do we become even able, truly, to love our families as ourselves, and to place that love even before material possessions, as the prodigal father has done. In my view, this insight is especially helpful to us now, given that on a cultural basis, our definitions of what a family is continue to evolve and to expand and to change. We're learning to include same-sex couples, chosen families, blended families, etc. We especially need this insight now, given the anxieties that some of these changes can bring up in some of us at times. The prodigal father knows what we ourselves so easily forget, that our life and love are gifts, freely given. We cannot earn them or deserve them. Above all, we cannot possess the people around us. No matter how much we love them, we cannot make them earn or deserve our love. This is our continual struggle. This wise and foolish father has foreseen the freedom which Christ holds out to us within and without our families. If only we can let go enough to experience it. By losing everything to his foolish son, he has against all odds gained everything. He has given up not only his possessions, but the whole notion of possessing in itself. He has, however, allowed himself to be possessed by God, the loving Father of all, and has extended that same love to his own family. In that letting go, he is free, and so are both his sons.